Hi, you're listening to my favourite Elliott Smith song. This is the podcast that's all about keeping Elliott Smith's legacy alive in our own very small way. And we do that by speaking to well-known fans about their favourite song of his. So hi, and thank you so much for joining us for this one, episode 18. Today we're speaking to the musician Andy Hull. Andy's probably best known as the lead singer and songwriter for the band Manchester Orchestra. And as well as that band though, one of Andy's side projects is called Bad Books, which is a collaboration with a former guest on this show, Kevin Devine. So a nice My Favourite Elliott Smith song connection there. And Andy was recording some new Bad Books material when I called him up for this interview. It was a really nice chat, and Andy discussed his favourite song, how he's discovering new things with Elliott's work all the time, and why his music meant so much to him growing up in a small Georgia town. So here you go then. Here's the interview I recorded with Andy Hull. Hope you enjoy it.
Hello, my name is Andy Hull. It is a pleasure to be on the podcast. I picked my favorite Elliott Smith song is I Didn't Understand. When I started thinking about what had really influenced me the most out of his material, I think it was that song. He had sort of unlocked something, the a cappella arrangement, using his voice as these string instruments. Other versions of that song as well that I'd heard later, there's a great one, I think he's on BBC. He plays it on piano and it takes on a whole different life of its own. So yeah, I think it came down to like the influence of it. And I remember going to my still collaborator partner in Manchester, Robert, his house. He was probably 14 and I was 16 or 17. And us playing it and like trying to recreate songs like that. Okay, cool, let's write, you know, something with four low parts, and it was all awful and it was never great, but it was just influential.
Thought you'd be looking for the next in line to love, then ignore, put away, and so you'd soon be leaving me alone like I'm supposed to be tonight, tomorrow, and every day.
There's a melancholiness to it. It's sort of bitter. I think probably when I heard it, I had a different feeling about it because I was so young, so I sort of attached myself to the angst of it. It always feels like his songs are written, what I love about him, and like even guys like Nick Drake, it's like you don't really know exactly what he's talking about. There are little moments of clarity and snapshots of time, but then he'll go follow the next line with something, you know, sort of out there in outer space, and you're trying to follow what that means as well. That's sort of one of the things I love about it the most, is I can attach my own meaning to the song.
Just going back to the original point that you made there, there are some incredibly melancholy lines in the song. I mean, one that really always stands out to me is, there's nothing here that you'll miss. I can guarantee you this is a cloud of smoke.
Trying to occupy space, what a fucking joke, what a fucking joke. He has to repeat it. It's brutal. I don't know. I think there's lighter moments here and there on XO, musically for sure.
There's nothing here that you'll miss. I can guarantee you this is a cloud of smoke. Trying to occupy space. What a fucking joke. What a fucking joke.
And as you were saying at the beginning of the interview, on the album, this song is done a cappella. Why do you think he decided to do it like this?
Yeah, good question. I think because it's so wildly effective, you know? I wonder if it was like he was doing, I have no idea, right? But I'm just speculating. I wonder if he was doing the instrumentation and, you know, one of the guys, maybe Rob, said like, you know, let's mute everything. And it's just his voice. And it's like, oh my God, you know? Also, to end an album, so an incredible album like this that's been so thorough and it never missteps, is just very cool. I got to think some element of cool was thought about.
I waited for a bus to separate the both of us and take me all far away from you.
It's the most intimate, you know? It strips it all away and gets sort of to, you're listening to him. You've got him spilling out his guts, and there's nothing to distract you other than the beauty of his voice. It's such a bold move. And it still sounds timeless. It's tough to find a cappella music like that in general. I scored a movie called Swiss Army Man with Robert a few years ago. And one of the tasks that the filmmakers told us about required from us is that we only used our voices and the actors' voices. We couldn't use any instrumentation. And I immediately thought of this. I was like, oh yeah, we gotta like try and do that thing that he did.
'Cause my feelings never change a bit. I always feel like shit. I don't know why. I guess that I just do.
The song comes last on the album XO, and as you were saying, it seems like quite a well thought out choice putting it there. So how important is track listing on an album as a musician?
Personally, for me, it's up there as the most important part. I think records can be made and broken by the track listing. This record's pretty beautifully and seamlessly put together. But yeah, I think about it a lot. I try and think about it as early as I can in the record making process, so you can start to kind of build a narrative throughout and a line that you can follow, your ups and downs, and you know, not making something too top heavy and all that stuff. I don't think this song works as well anywhere else on the record, on XO, unless maybe it opened it. It's sort of like the Bible of albums though, so who am I to like speculate where the track should go? I was having this discussion with Kevin because we've been talking about it, Kevin Devine, about me doing this podcast and how impossible it feels to pick one. We were talking about, you know, what is your favorite record if you could even choose that. And that was really difficult as well. But I don't know, something about this and Either Or feel like brother sister records to me. And there's sort of a steady line through them. And maybe it's better even like father son, where he's doing the most he can with what he's got. And then XO has this feeling of like, ooh, wait a minute. Now you can, I mean, the string arrangements, the stuff that he was doing, arrangements like that on Either Or, but didn't have all the same instruments to play them on. It's also like, so Either Or sounds like it's recorded in a basement or a closet or, you know, at home. And XO really sounds like completely timeless. It sounds like it could have been recorded this year. So yeah, that's sort of how I look at both of them.
You once talked to me about love, and you painted pictures of a never, never land. And I could have gone to that place, but I didn't understand. I didn't understand. I didn't understand.
So tell us, Andy, how you first got into Elliot's music.
I was in high school trying to gather up enough money to record an EP. And I met this guy who was probably, I was 16, so he was probably 22. And he just sort of had a vast, wide record collection and knew a lot of stuff that I hadn't been exposed to. And Elliot was the one I connected to the most and the strongest out of all of it. And I remember when he passed, I was in English class and had found out the guy called me that morning before I went to school. And I still, I imagine it's still there. It wrote underneath this kind of cupboard and I carved in, you know, his name and rest in peace with the dates on it. I've always been curious if it's still there. But yeah, just was a huge, huge fan and nobody around me knew who he was in the small kind of town I was going to school in. So he also felt like a secret, something that was just kind of blowing my mind. A couple of the songs I almost picked was 245. That might be a tie for me. And the reason I love that song so much is that I'd never heard musically something that felt like it was being played wrong, but with this incredible vocal melody that worked over top of it. It was like that song did everything I didn't want it to do, and it ended up being my favorite song. So yeah, it was pretty mind-blowing, life-changing really, because it affected how I would then go on to write music and be influenced by it.
And does Elliot Smith go on influencing your work today?
Hopefully, the hope is that you get smarter and better at what you do. And with music, the best part about it being my job or anyone's job is that there is no ceiling to it. Like there's always room to move and get better and challenge yourself. So now, like this last week, when I've been pretty exclusively just listening to him in preparation for this, I'm hearing even more new stuff that I've heard it thousands of times, but the stuff that I heard in EXO this last week, I probably heard 50 things that I hadn't really picked up on or hadn't thought about in a long time. So even that, you know, working on this Bad Books record with Kevin this week, it's worked out great because I've just listened to Nonstop Elliott Smith and now I'm making a record. So I'm influenced a lot by it. But really, I was more surprised at how much stuff I had forgotten and how effective production-wise so many of the things he does, his ability to treat a harmony and it's a harmony for the first half of a line, but the second half of the line, when it hits, it becomes the melody that you as the listener attach yourself to. It's so Beatles-y, like in the best way possible. He's sort of the, Kevin and I were talking about this as well, he's sort of all four Beatles as one person. He's got all of the kind of vitriol and aggression that John had. He's got the delicate thing that Paul had. He's got the guitar playing that George had, you know, and his drumming is amazing too. So sort of the perfect artist.
And lastly, just tell us what those bits are on XO that you've recently discovered or you've recently rediscovered.
Oh, well, one was the string section at the end of Waltz number two. I had totally forgotten about that. You go this whole song for 3.5 minutes, 4 minutes, and then there's these terrorizing, almost sounds like the Exorcist strings. It's going like, and it elevates the last 30 seconds of the song to like crazy levels. That was something that stuck out to me.
I didn't understand.
So thank you then to Andy Hull for taking part in this show. And before I go, I just wanted to quickly mention the next episode of the podcast, which will be out in a couple of weeks. This one is going to be a bit of a Portland special with a legend from the music scene there, Pete Krebs, who worked with Elliott Smith a lot of times during the 90s. So hopefully you're able to join us for that one. Lastly, thank you to Elizabeth Woodstanley for her production on this show. And thanks also to Greg Cortez from New Monkey Studio for his continued editing help. And finally, thank you for listening. We'll see you again soon.